gentlemen, may I have your attention?
I remember specifically, Monty, being in my kindergarten class and the teacher, Miss Kurtz, I don't even know, I'll put her on blast, I don't care. But Miss Kurtz basically split up the kids and was like, who wants to be pilgrims and who wants to be Indians? And we, of course, got the construction paper out, cut out the little hats. And I remember, man, while doing that project, I was like, this is weird.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Latina, Latino, Latinx. My name is Monty Rossetti. We're coming to the end of season two. This is the last episode. And later this week, we're going to be gathering together to celebrate a holiday that's been important to a lot of Americans. And we decided that we would like to talk about the reality of this holiday and what we were taught. So on this special episode, the last episode of season two, I brought over my co-host and friend, Alexis Terrazas, and we're going to go ahead and have this conversation. We're specifically talking about Thanksgiving, and it's obviously a holiday about family, and we're definitely not anti-family. We're also very supportive.
Speak for yourself. No, I'm kidding.
Oh man, this breaking news. I hope your family isn't listening to this episode. No. I think it's something that we talk about a lot, where there is this this term, cancel culture, and we're not out here saying cancel Thanksgiving. Go ahead and have your family gatherings and everything, but what we want to talk about on this episode are two big points. One is, what were we taught as kids and how we were just told to accept it and not ask questions? And I understand, especially as a young child, teaching them about mass murder is probably not the way to go. But there's definitely things that we were not told about and were overlooked. The other point we want to talk about is kind of what really happened, you know, and kind of what it's still going on, the erasure of history that's been going on towards the our indigenous brothers and sisters. So definitely let's jump into that first topic. And Alexis, I guess my first question then would be, what were you taught as a child? You went to school here in the Bay Area. What were you taught about Thanksgiving?
I went to school, Marjorie H. Tobias Elementary School, and I guess it's on the border of Colma, Daly City, but whatever, it's Ohlone land, right? And I think that's something, before I answer your question, Monty, I do want to acknowledge that, right? Do a land acknowledgement of what we're sitting on, right? Because all of this is stolen land, and as two men, right, who aren't indigenous, you know, we might have traces of indigenous ancestry, but I could just speak for myself. I didn't grow up indigenous, right? So I do want to just throw that out there, that this conversation is between two individuals, right? But what was I taught as a kid? I was taught what everybody else was taught. I remember specifically, Monty, being in my kindergarten class and the teacher, Miss Kurtz. I don't even know. I'll put her on blast. I don't care. But Miss Kurtz basically split up the kids and was like, who wants to be pilgrims and who wants to be Indians? And we, of course, got the construction paper out, cut out the little hats. And I remember, man, while doing that project, I was like, this is weird. Like, this is really weird. And I even took issue, I don't know why, but even when we were taught like that song with the William Guthrie song, right? Which is apparently supposed to be like a very radical song. This land is my land. And I even took issue with those lyrics, because I don't know who planted the seed. It must have been my parents. But I just never felt comfortable with, like, knowing that we were, even ourselves, right? Like, visitors on this stolen land, you know? So that's what I was taught, man. The same Kumbaya story, that you had a group of persecuted Europeans escaping religious persecution, going to, like, the New World, being greed, being like starving and disease ridden with scurvy, and, you know, being encountered by like these very generous group of people, right? We weren't even taught the name of the indigenous group that met the pilgrims. We're taught the Mayflower, we're taught Plymouth Rock. We're not taught the Wampanoag. We're not, that name was irrelevant, right? Because of course they're not part of that narrative. So, you know, we're taught, hey, they taught them how to grow corn. They taught them how to grow squash, celebrating their first harvest, kumbaya. And then it fast forwards to like, all right, now it's the foundation of the United States. We good. That's kind of the short cliff note version of what I remember.
So. No, exactly. I mean, that's kind of what I was taught as well. I don't want to put any of my teachers on blast because I'm sure they're all avid listeners of this podcast. So no, it's funny because I actually don't remember which one specifically, but pretty much all elementary, middle school teachers. And honestly, it's not even, I don't even know if it's a teacher's fault. It's the curriculum. It's right. The society that we live in. And I actually do want to mention, I'm happy you did mention that, yes, we are on a lonely land. And I think that's important too, because when you look at the history of the world, there's been definitely situations where a group of people lived on a certain land, and because of war or whatever, another group came in and took over, and that's been accepted as like, that's the way it is. I think what we're talking about on this episode too is the washing of history that has been taught to us. Because if you conquered a land and then later on you're teaching generations later and later, like, nah, it was, there was a party, you know, this with a turkey, some cranberry sauce, mashed potatoes, whatever you want, that's what they had back then, and we're all good friends, and then they just graciously gave up their land. No, it was people that were taken advantage of, and for whatever reason, we're not taught this this side of the history. I do want to ask you then, kind of moving forward, because you did talk about how you question it, and it's interesting because I didn't question it a lot when I was a kid, which I just, you know, this is what I was also I was a kid that loved food, you know, so I was more just looking forward to like, oh man, just getting closer to that time we're gonna feast and eat everything we wanted to eat and everything. But yeah, like, how was it for you, you know, growing up and just having Thanksgiving with your family and everything?
Yeah, man, it was cool. I was actually gonna ask you real quick before moving on, did you have a really Argentine Thanksgiving?
No. We definitely had the whole Thanksgiving, like, turkey and everything. And I remember my dad, who's from Argentina, he loves gravy. That was his thing too. But again, like, those, you know, you had nice family memories in that moment. But, you know, how was it for you? And when did you start kind of questioning, you know, the holiday itself as well? Yeah, doing that transition.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up, every year, right? Turkey, food, family. You know, I have four siblings, you know, so we would all, like, basically try to get together. You know, and it's been hard the last few years because we're all older. We have our own families. We live in different parts of the country. But I remember actually one of the kind of key things is Thanksgiving's a big deal in Narcotics Anonymous. And my father is a member of NA. So like a lot of my childhood, man, we would actually spend it with like other folks in 12-step recovery. And it was really cool. Like, you know, there's a lot of things that I could say about 12-step, you know, a lot of good, a lot, you know, maybe not so good, right? But it was kind of neat seeing like adults really kind of taking this moment to like reflect on things that they were grateful for, their recovery, for example. So that's what I remember when I was a kid. As I started getting older and, you know, going to school and, you know, basically listening to other things outside of our traditional kind of K through 12 school curriculum, of course, being in college, ethnic studies. I took some ethnic studies courses at the College of San Mateo. I'm a Peninsula kid and I'm proud of it. And that's kind of when I really started listening to, you know, why this intuition I had as a kid, like, why is this so weird? Like the whole feathered headdresses and pilgrim hats, why is this weird? And it wasn't until I got to like college and started looking at, actually started before that in high school. We took some critical thinking classes there too, but it was really like when I started, you know, in junior college, like taking these ethnic studies courses, where I started like kind of learning about our own local history, right? The occupation at Alcatraz in 1969, right? We're a group of, at the time, I think they called themselves American Indians, right? You know, taking over Alcatraz and occupying it. That was Thanksgiving 1969, you know? So it was then that I started kind of listening and recognizing that this isn't a day of thanks for everybody. In fact, it is a day of mourning for a lot of people. And of course, at that time, I was also a student journalist. So I just kind of got the bug of like, I want to tell the side of history or like the stories that aren't often kind of woven into the mainstream media narrative. And how do you do that, right? You listen to indigenous voices, right? And if you do that, they, you know, and I say that again, saying that I'm not an indigenous person. So the best thing I can do as a journalist is to try to uplift the voices of other folks and what this holiday means to them. And it was gradually like through that I started kind of creating my own like mentality of what this holiday means. And personally, it doesn't mean a whole lot. Like I love my I'm a family man, like, right? I'm married, I got twins, you know, so. But it just I refuse to fall into like the trope of just celebrating a holiday because they tell you to, without knowing what really went down and what are the seeds for that. I feel like this is the history of this country and even the conquest of this continent is unraveling before us. At least the pretty kind narrative that they've painted for us as kids is starting to unravel everywhere, and we're starting to see the real brutal truths, and that is threatening to the existing power structure, which is why we fight so hard, or why we see certain forces in this country fight so hard against what we've come to know as like critical race theory in school. But yeah, that's kind of how I started to like really be critical of this thing, and even like as a young man, I was like really pessimistic. Like, why the fuck are we even celebrating this, you know? And as a journalist too, man, and now, like, and I've changed over the years. I used to not be, I went through waves as a journalist. And now the editor of this community bilingual newspaper, whose mission it is and always has been to uplift the stories of those that have often been buried. And of course, you know, the cliche, give voice to the voiceless. But again, it's more than that. It's being critical and really kind of seeing how connected all of our struggles are to one another, and then from there build unity. So long story short, man, that's kind of how I was like raised with Thanksgiving as a kid and how I view it even today.
One of the things I want to talk about too is the historical aspect of Thanksgiving through the years. And you mentioned how, you know, everyone talks about it as a celebration, but it's a day of mourning for a lot of people, especially our Indigenous brothers and sisters. And it's kind of this, you know, you think of, they also went to schools like we did, and they were taught this, you know, beautiful scene of togetherness. And I'm sure for them, they had, you know, they had a lot of questions as well. Like, no, this isn't really what happened. And one of the things I want to talk about too was before recording, we were, you know, doing the math, and this is actually the 400th anniversary of that first Thanksgiving in 1621. It's also 500 years since the Spanish came and took over Mexico. So these are different, you know, historical things that we aren't, again, taught about a lot. And I wanted to get your mindset into that a little bit too, because you also brought up a good point, and I'm going to steal this from you. We're in the Mission District. This is called the Mission. The missions were things that were used kind of as to colonize that piece of land, and also to, quote, re-educate the indigenous people in the area. What do you think about, you know, that? And again, we work, we live, we walk through these streets. We need to know what we're, like, the land that we're walking on and the history behind it. What do you think about all of the, you know, what that means to you?
Was it last summer when I think it was last summer when we were talking about all these different reckonings, right? Statues, so not just Confederate statues, but statues of colonizers, not just here, but in Europe, were being torn down and thrown into rivers, right? We were looking at the artifacts that were being housed in different museums. So it was easy for us to say, like, finally, there's a reckoning happening in all of these institutions. And we must do that reckoning ourselves. As somebody, you and I both, Monty, were born and raised here in the Bay Area, right? That's a reckoning that my grandmother was born in this neighborhood. She's not Ohlone though, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like we're still visitors on this land. Even this Mission District, which I have grown to love, it has an incredibly violent history to how it came to be. And not just Mission Dolores, but the entire mission system throughout California. And there have been efforts to really kind of, again, de-romanticize this, you know, California's history and the sainthood of the canonization of Junipero Serra, mm-hmm. right? Who there's still like a big statue on 280. Like if you go, I think it's Woodside or I don't know, not Woodside. It's another rich neighborhood.
Hillsborough.
Thank you. Yeah, Hillsborough. Yeah. Right. So there have been efforts to try to like re-educate people on, because talking about doing like the pilgrim hats, we all did like the mission mm-hmm. projects. I remember my mission to San Rafael. I've never been to the mission of San Rafael, but I was like, sure, I'll do this one. The indoctrinating process starts at a very young age in the school system to be like, hey, yeah, colonization happened. We're not going to tell you about the violent part, but here's like a spoonful of sugar to make it more palatable. That's what the narrative we came up with Thanksgiving about the missions here in California and specifically here in San Francisco. That's what it's about. And in terms of like you mentioned, we started off this episode, I think you were talking about like how appropriate is it to teach kids about a violent history? I've been talking to a few children's authors, one of them, Oriel Maria Siu, who we featured on the pod a few months ago. She has a really good book, by the way, Christopher the Ogre Kologer. It's over looking at like the original ogre, Christopher Columbus, right? And I asked her, your book has a lot of like, it's beautiful art, but there's also like a lot of violence. Like, how do you go about teaching kids about these violent acts? And she had a really wonderful response. She's a mother herself. She's an educator. And pulling from her own experience, she was like, listen, I've raised kids. I've taught kids. I know that they have the mental capacity to be able to learn and digest truth. And I carry that with me as a parent. When I talk about my kids are Mexican Filipino, my daughter knows what the term colonizer is because I bought a book for her about, you know, Lapu-Lapu, Killing mm-hmm. Magellan, another book plug on that too. But she knows what that is, you know? I think one of the ways we reckon is by not just teaching ourselves or being open to teaching like true history or like the way things really went down, but to like break these cycles, these mythical cycles of falsehoods with our own children and with our own youth that look up to us. I do it with my kids, you know, and I hope to do it with my journalism. And I know people like I've been called a revisionist before by some more conservative people in my family, and I don't care. But I think that's like the risk we need to take in terms of like reckoning with ourselves, you know, first acknowledging that, yeah, we are visitors on this land, you know, and how we can uplift the voices of those who have been most impacted. You know, I'm also not lost that I don't know if we want to get into like what actually happened, because we're not historians, but we've read about what happened. I don't know if we want to go for it. Yeah. So, I mean, I was like doing research on this last night, right? And it was just hilarious to me. Maybe it was hilarious. It was like the original Thanksgiving was like the most American thing ever, right? Do you remember? Do you know what happened, right?
I wasn't there, but no, go for it.
My bad. So like apparently, and I've read this a few different scholarly articles like support this, that it wasn't in fact like this peaceful thing. The Wampanoag, even like I think it was 3 years prior to 1620, a great like plague had devastated their people. So like 2/3 of them had been wiped out, you know? So, and of course there were like, you know, tribal or native politics, right? Maybe like, you know, conflicts with other mm-hmm. native tribes. So the leader, the sachem, I believe, of the Wampanoag was like, I'm going to hedge my bet. I'm going to approach these new people as allies, mm-hmm. you know? You know, they have weaponry that we don't. Maybe like, it was basically like a decision out of survival. To approach them, and of course they saw them, you know, suffering from all these diseases, not knowing how to plant food on southeastern Massachusetts, and so at the first harvest a year later, 1621, the pilgrims were celebrating their harvest, and of course are shooting in the most American style ever, start shooting their guns off. Well, the Wampanoag hear and they come to their rescue, and they're like, "What's going on?" Like, "Oh no, we're just celebrating." So the Wampanoag weren't even invited to like the first Thanksgiving, right? So that's like, okay, we're gonna kind of kill this narrative once and for all right here. The place where the pilgrims landed is 40 miles south of a city known as Boston. Do you know what the Boston baseball team was called at one point, Monty?
Oh man, I don't even, I'm scared. I know that the Red Sox now, but There's been a lot of questions. There's
another team called the Boston Braves.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know, which they later moved to Milwaukee and then Atlanta. They just won the, you know, the World Series. Yeah. I was rooting hard against them, but whatever. But the chant that they do in Atlanta, the tomahawk chop. And there was a bunch of people on social media talking about, like, yo, why is... why are these major cable networks like broadcasting this, right? And of course, you have folks on the other side. Why are you trying to cancel the tomahawk chop? Aren't there more important things? And the issue is, yes, there are more important things than native mascots in sports. But until you recognize that this is rooted in a racist, white supremacist past that is not celebrating natives but mocking them, you're never gonna get to dealing like the real important issues that still plague and impact Native communities, right? Such as teen suicide on reses, such as missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls and trans and two-spirits. Like, we're never going to get to those things unless we, you know, acknowledge and address things in mainstream culture.
Talk about, you know, normalizing these acts against the Indigenous community. I mean, the border, the imaginary border between USA and Mexico goes, it cuts off a lot of territories, reservations that are given to Indigenous groups. And these walls that are now being put on are definitely dividing families. And nobody says anything. And the government, and again, we've had a Democrat as president who isn't changing anything. So it's not a Democrat Republican thing. This is an American acceptance of just overlooking a group of people that to this day, we're not only talking about 16, 20, 21, like we're talking about today still are being overlooked. And this holiday, again, the reason this holiday was brought to light was because people were afraid they were going to be forgotten, you know, and two instances that the government kind of stepped up and made sure that this holiday was respected was Civil War with Abraham Lincoln. What was going on with Civil War? The country was falling apart, so you're trying to now unify the country. So let's get this holiday together to bring the country together. And the other one was FDR made it a federal holiday, December 26, 1941. What also happened in December 1941? Pearl Harbor, when the United States entered the war, World War II. So you needed another reason to bring this country together. So you're using this holiday, forgetting the history, forgetting the atrocities that were created because of this beginning here in the United States with colonization through English people, through the you know, pilgrims or whoever came in afterwards. The fact that we are now celebrating this, and again, I'm not saying canceling it. What we're doing on this episode is we're just talking about what happened. And when we, or if you are listening to this and you're gathering with your family, maybe this is a good conversation to have. Maybe somebody in your family doesn't want to hear it. And that's totally acceptable. But these are kind of conversations we'd like to be having more and more, where we do want to question why are we celebrating certain holidays? What's kind of creating these certain holidays? And yeah, I think what you're saying too is there is a strong point with kind of just keeping ourselves in check moving forward.
And I always try to like think, and this is just the way my mind works as a journalist, right? Storytellers, you know, and we've been taught these narratives, right? Like, all right, yeah, the romanticization of two worlds meeting, right? And that's, I guess, but my main issue with it is, and you touched on this, the erasure of not just like of various groups of people on this continent, like the original inhabitants of this continent who are like not even secondary. They're not even footnotes in this grand romantic kind of version of history that we're taught. And I think that's a responsibility for people like you and I, people who work, who are trained journalists, who are trained podcast producers, who are working at an outlet that was founded to lend voice to those who really never bothered being heard at mainstream media outlets. That's why we exist, to like uplift these stories, and not just uplift, but again, to be critical, you know? And I know there's a bunch of also like Latino identifying folks or Latinx identifying folks who have their own version of Thanksgiving, right? Which is cool. But again, before you buy in, my urge would be before you buy in to like this American dream of being great, working hard and being grateful for what this country has given you, because a lot of our families do buy into that. Think about the narrative. Just consider the narrative, right? These people were persecuted in their homeland, leaving, disease-ridden, 66, whatever it was, day journey, crossing across the ocean, and then they're welcomed here with open arms. I can't help but think about the migrants, you know, from Haiti, you know, migrants from Central America and Mexico, who endure similar persecution in their homelands, right? Escaping devastation, a lot of it. We could get into like the root causes of it, but I won't for now. And they get here. And instead of being welcomed with open arms, are greeted by Border Patrol agents in cowboy hats with whips, are greeted by Border Patrol agents that put them into freezing cold detention centers and separate them from their families. And for me, it's, I just urge folks to really not just wake up, but acknowledge what this place is and what it was built upon. You know, that's all. That's all.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Alexis, for making time to be on this episode. Thank you for everything you've done so far for Radio Teco. This concludes season 2, and we'll catch you on the next one. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Radio Teco, the podcast of El Tecolote, California's longest-running bilingual community Latino newspaper. If you enjoyed listening to this episode and are looking for more of our content, please visit our website, eltecolote.org. And if you value bilingual storytelling and would like to support our next 50 years of community journalism, please consider making a donation or sign up to volunteer.